Hey East Meets West listeners, this week we're taking out the microscope and taking a closer look at software as a service companies in Asia. In particular, we unpack the different drivers for SaaS in Asia compared to the rest of the world, and how different trends are taking place depending on the country and the region. This is a really great episode to unpack what is Asia and how different things are happening in different countries within it. Keep listening and enjoy. Welcome to the East Meets West podcast, a podcast about understanding Asia tech and how Asia tech affects the world. As always, my name is Dan and joining me is Albert from Astral Ventures. How are you going, Albert?
Dan, I'm going pretty good. How are you?
Doing well. Yesterday I had a wedding which sort of went from midday all the way to midnight, so that was a long shift. But really pleased actually to be talking in this week's episode about SaaS in Asia. An interesting topic, able to get me out and about and get my brain firing, so keen to actually talk about this one.
That was like such a backhanded slap to this wedding, being like, it was a good wedding, but nowhere near as exciting as looking at Asia tech companies. My brain wasn't working at the wedding. I'm excited for my brain to be working now.
That's an easy plug for the pod, Albert. Get your brain working. If you've got a wedding, just pop in some earphones and listen to the pod. It will really get you going. But I'm surprised, Albert. Surely this has got you fired up. SaaS, a bit of your pet industry. Asia, an area that you love. Put the two together and what do you get, Albert?
Asian SaaS, you know, 1 + 1 = 2, as they say. Look, yeah, definitely really interesting. I think, you know, there's a great book called Crossing the Chasm, which talks about like technology adoption, particularly in SaaS.
Yep.
And I think if you contextualize like how Asia tech is crossing the chasm right now, in maturity, I think this is a region as a whole is a very interesting one to look at when it comes to SaaS because of it's so fragmented. And I'm pretty excited to get into it today.
Yeah, I think we had a bit of a brief chat before we started recording. There's definitely a lot of challenges in Asia, and it's maybe one of the, you know, one of the reasons we do East Meets West, Albert, is when you compare the development curve of the SaaS industry from the Western counterparts, which is obviously further along that curve, to our Eastern counterparts here in Asia, you can really start to draw some interesting insights and project out as to what's going to be happening in the future. But, you know, without burying the lead too much, Albert, where do you want to start in this week's episode?
Look, let's just kind of set the scene around SaaS in Asia specifically. I know definitely go check out our primer episode on SaaS as a good kind of good runway into this episode if you haven't yet. Here we'll land the plane specifically on SaaS in Asia. So I guess to contextualize, I mean, SaaS in Asia broadly is starting to follow the same kind of maturity curve as Western countries. I think as a good comp, Bain have this like awesome chart that shows maturity. And so in China, you know, the mainframe really only started to get a lot of traction in 1995. But you know, the mainframe got traction a long time before that in the US in the 1980s, which shows kind of the initial time lag between technology and particularly like mainframe computing technology in Asia versus the US. That gap is starting to compress now. Like, I guess another good comp here, private cloud got good traction in 2010 in the US, but private cloud only got traction around 2014, 2015. So you can really see how, like, as a whole, the region lags in maturity, and that's for different things that we'll talk about throughout the pod, but throughout this episode, sorry. But I guess the key things that's probably worth taking away is that, like, on a whole, computer penetration, as in, like, owning a computer and running, like, computer devices and things like that, the hardware itself has low penetration in Asia compared to Western markets. And because you've got low penetration of computers and then lower levels of maturity, that has led to a pretty significant maturity gap in a lot of these countries.
Yeah. So, I mean, usually we're talking about how Asia is streets ahead of their Western counterparts. And this is one where it's not the case. And I think it's less about, you know, where we really see Asia, I think, at the forefront is consumer habits, where they're very quick adopters looking for something novel and new and really keen to take it up. And in that sense, you know, digital literacy in Asia is really, really, really high. Everyone's on their phone at the forefront. But computing infrastructure, cloud infrastructure in this case, that is a harder road to hoe, because you really have to have the investment where you're building out that infrastructure, the data centers, etc. What I found really useful in my research, Albert, is there's sort of an index comparing the cloud infrastructure across the region, particularly in APAC, and then they've also got some markers against Western counterparts, Brazil, Europe, and in America. And there you can see this really, really big gap where essentially Hong Kong and Singapore, you know, are kind of comparable to Western counterparts. There was a score out of 100, so this is the CRI index. Hong Kong and Singapore are sitting about 80 in terms of their total score. Brazil, as an example, is sitting at about 60, Germany 75, and then some of the other Western countries are more in that sort of 80 range. But then when you look at the bottom end, not bottom end, but the more developing end of Asia, Southeast Asia, you know, you've got Indonesia in the 50s, Vietnam in the 40s, Philippines in the 50s. There's just this really, really lower level of infrastructure development. And these are things, if I break down, you know, what some of these indices are tracking, one is international connectivity, which is basically like your total international traffic. How much of your stuff on the internet is going outbound to other countries and how much from other countries is coming inbound into yours. Other is broadband quality, really simple, just your average internet speeds for your consumers. And then third is power grid, green policy and sustainability. And that really goes to the point about building out data centers in these countries. If you've got instability in terms of your power supply, etc., it's really hard to invest and build these assets in your country, which is why, you know, you have places like Singapore building out data centers to be used by the region, because your places like Philippines and others just don't necessarily have the setup in their country to have that asset. So those are things which really go towards the infrastructure point. And it's almost like a prereq, wouldn't you say, Albert, is like if you can't have this infrastructure in place, it's really hard to have a thriving cloud and SaaS industry.
Yeah, 100%. You hit that on the head, absolutely. Like if you just can't get the foundations, if you're imagining a house where like the house itself is, you know, the broader SaaS thriving market where you've got a lot of like healthy SaaS players. If you don't get the foundations right, which is getting the infrastructure right, getting connectivity, getting, you know, power, uptime, things like that, then you can't run a successful SaaS business, let alone sustain a SaaS market. Like if you were a customer and you were trying to buy cloud infrastructure and they said the uptime was like maybe 70% because, you know, we've got power outages and things like that is absolutely not acceptable. Like uptime now and in cloud is like 99.999999%. Like it's ridiculous how good uptime is. And when you can't meet the standards of that, it's very difficult to build a SaaS business and then more broadly like a SaaS industry.
So that's sort of the infrastructure side of things. One of the other parts which I see is, if I were to categorize it, as like the supply side, you know, what are some of the factors which need to be there for SaaS to thrive is talent. And, you know, I've had some interesting conversations with people in tech, particularly in Australia, who have some exposure to Asia. And in fact, you know, some of these companies here in Australia, obviously a lot of their talent they're actually using from India, from Asia, because of the competitively lower prices. There is talent to be had there. Education is ongoing. You're getting more and more people doing these degrees, which upskill them, whether it be in institutions like universities or just like, you know, they're hustling, they're learning these skills on the side because it's a great economic opportunity for them. I'm also bullish in the idea, like at the moment, you've got this really big tech crash where a lot of companies are laying off their workers. And I think when you've got that much churn of talent, that's a really healthy thing because it means that rather than the Googles, the Microsofts holding the top end talent, it allows the talent to sort of flow through the rest of the industry. But Albert, you know, you might be a little bit closer to this. Like, what do you hear in terms of like the talent capability in Asia to grow some of these SaaS businesses?
It's really hard because you need to kind of segment when you talk about talent. Like, it's not just a generic employee or a developer or a data analyst. And so like there's different levels of talent that you need to think about when it comes to building a business. Like there's like an individual contributor, which I'm sure now that you've got layoffs, and I don't know how the layoffs have been segmented with workers, but even if you assume 10% or 5% people who are from the region or localized to the region, then you know that's good talent going back into that. But then, you know, when you think about building a business, you've got managers, you've got people with domain expertise, you've got people who've built businesses before, particularly in a challenging domain like technology and SaaS, and then in a regional domain like Asia. Like it takes a very specific type of person to be and help build a successful business. So I personally, even with these layoffs, just don't think the talent, what's required from like a capability lens, is actually present when you've got mass layoffs of capability when it comes to individual contributors, but not people who are experienced builders, people who are experienced leaders, etc. So yes, there's probably technical talent out there, but the what it actually takes to go build a business like Freshworks in India or Zoho or Atlassian in Australia, like that talent is very, very rare. I think then competing for that talent is also incredibly difficult.
I love the distinction between that and just sort of breaking it down, Albert. You mentioned some of the challenges, and you also mentioned Freshworks, which, you know, if you're starting research into what's happening with SaaS in Asia, Freshworks is, you know, the standout. Every article is referencing them as the standard bearer for why SaaS in Asia can work, can be successful. But I think once you get over, you know, the really shallow comparison, which is a simply they're a SaaS business based out of India and they're successful, when you drill down, Albert, and you start to assess, you know, the market as a whole, the challenges that we've discussed and some more that we'll bring up, why is Freshworks, you know, probably not the best example, or maybe not the be all and end all of the story of what's happening with SaaS in Asia?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Obviously, Freshworks is super successful, and they went and IPO'd in 2021. I think that you kind of can kind of break it down into supply and demand constraints, and then think about how that plays out on a regional basis. It's like on the demand side, it's like, are the customers willing to pay for software? Do they have the maturity to use the software? And like, what are the kind of like infrastructure barriers that prevent them or enable them to choose software? So there's like high level things on the demand side. And then on the supply side, like funding and investment into the region, the talent required, you know, who else is operating in the space, like competitiveness. And then like, you know, like, are they the right products? And I think if you look at them holistically from a demand and a supply side, I think India as a country is a really successful is a really, really successfully positioned business to push harder into SaaS. Like Indian companies, you know, have, you know, generally lower cost of labor, you know, they can see clear ROI. There's lots of like Western countries or companies who operate in India. And so from a demand side, they've got the enthusiasm, they understand, and they've got the tech maturity, they know how SaaS works. They've used these tools because they predominantly work in Western countries. But I think even more specifically, and if you listen to our SaaS episode, we talk about this, is like SaaS is a workflow that has been productized into a piece of software. That's usually like something that's a task someone would do either on paper, on Excel or whatever. But now someone's automated it in a sense and put it in software so that it becomes easier to do. That's broadly what SaaS is. It's just like software that represents a workflow. In a lot of Asian countries, that workflow is quite convoluted and complex. But like, it's really inefficient generally. Like Asian workforce, very inefficient. They don't value efficiency. They probably value more like face time, like time put in, etc. And so when you don't have efficiency as an emphasis, and you don't have enthusiasm to buy SaaS, and you don't have the maturity, then you just don't have the demand side factors. But India is an example that does have the demand side factors. And then on the supply side, you know, talking about investments, talking about experience building a SaaS business, talk about competitive landscape. Like India is, again, like the case study for things that you want. Lots of investment from both Western and Indian investors. There's lots of people who are looking at the Indian space very closely. There's experience there in both building and running technology businesses. You know, you've got traditional kind of Indian businesses who've done really well, but you've also got Western companies who are now in India. And then you've got, you know, a pretty mature infrastructure base that enables connectivity across SaaS. So I think Freshworks, to come back to your question, Dan, I think is a case study in success, but shouldn't be used as like the general case study, because India as a region is very mature, both in the demand and supply side, whereas other countries in Asia, because they're all at different levels of maturity and developed nations and, you know, socioeconomic status, aren't.
No, that's a great point. And I think it leads to, I think, a theme we can hit on just for this next little segment here, Albert, which is let's break up this headline of, you know, the challenges of SaaS in Asia. What do we mean by Asia here? And as you said, like, India is its own beast. It has its own history. You know, I'm thinking of the White Tiger novel, now also a movie. You know, one of the big pieces there was, how did that guy make his money? Well, it's because in the region, there was this thriving tech business from America where outsourcing was taking place. And that's been going on, you know, for decades now. The maturity level in India towards tech is much, much higher. And they've got whole cities which are really known as these tech hubs. Where can we draw a comparison across other regions in Asia? I mentioned it when we were talking about maturity of cloud infrastructure. Hong Kong and Singapore, to me, are those outliers which, if you are going to expect there to be a new unicorn SaaS company or business, to me, it's Hong Kong and Singapore that you're looking at. Adding on an extra layer, though, I would probably, you know, put my bets on Singapore. Hong Kong has the sort of privacy and other issues with its relationships with China. So if you're really taking off that sovereign risk, which we've talked about in other episodes, Singapore to me seems like an area where you've got some of those factors you were talking about with Freshworks. There's a high degree of interconnectivity internationally. So many businesses from around the world are located in Singapore. So when you're talking about the demand factors, that customer demand coming from their maturity and familiarity with SaaS, being able to want to pick up these products, you have, you know, Meta headquartered there, Google, Microsoft, etc. These are players which are going to be comfortable trying out these new SaaS products and are going to have demand for those products. So if we just sort of take this as a moment to navel gaze, Albert, are there any other regions or countries like Hong Kong or Singapore that you think are closer on that curve? Or just, you know, how do you want to take this one? I'm really interested to see how we can break down Asia a little bit and come up with some insights for individual countries.
If I look at the maturity scale, and I think it's nice that you've got like these tables and your research notes, and you look at the more mature countries, say like Hong Kong, Singapore, India, like to me, the opportunity set is predominantly in SaaS. And like India, you've got Zoho, and they're a $1 billion revenue business. I'm sure they'll go, you know, public relatively soon. And Singapore, you've got a business called Trax, which I'm sure will also go public soon. So I think in those like more mature regions that have a lot of like Western technology influence, I think you could probably say SaaS there is an opportunity, particularly around SMB SaaS, because, you know, these regions are predominantly SMB focused. There's lots of small businesses there. They build for small businesses. And so I think there's the opportunity. Freshworks, obviously, again, an example. Zoho, again, another example. I think when you start to then look at some of the developing countries who are lagging in maturity, I think the opportunity there is around infrastructure. Yep. And so, you know, again, like if I look at your chart here, you've got Vietnam at the bottom. You know, I think in Vietnam, then you've got this business called VNG, which is like Vietnamese cloud. Then I think there the opportunity is looking at like who is actually building the infrastructure to solve maturity in these regions, because that enables SaaS. And I think until you solve and find those companies, you can't find SaaS. I think for the companies who are kind of in the middle, or perhaps even stalled, like Japan, obviously, Malaysia, Thailand, Korea, who are kind of emerging or coming out of like the you know, post-maturity phase where they've slowly started to emerge, you can start to see then like what is the influence of larger organizations like Tencent, Alibaba, JD, Pinduoduo, because those consumer businesses have invested in enterprise, and because they've got a strong foothold for from a customer penetration, I think they're trying to see if they can grow that into business. And I think that's kind of the playbook, which is like mature businesses, they've won against those regions, or they've won against competitors in those regions. In emerging regions, they're still building infrastructure. In like contested regions where they're slowly emerging or becoming mature, like now you've got a lot of companies investing in the space and trying to win.
So we've talked, Albert, about the infrastructure challenges, talent, some of the geographical factors specific to each geography. I'm interested to dive in a little bit more into what we mean by SaaS and some of the different verticals you see in SaaS. Are there any that you see as being, you know, maybe a little bit hotter for Asia? And, you know, in particular, I'm thinking when you're behind on the development curve, who did we see first emerge in Western countries when, you know, SaaS was a little bit more nascent? It was a company like Salesforce, which one way of thinking about them is like a very like horizontal SaaS business, in that CRM, customer relation tool, that can be used by any company in any industry. You know, if you're in law, you can use it. If you're in sales at you know, at a tech company, you can use CRM. It's not industry specific. It's when you get more up the maturity curve and there's much, much more demand for these SaaS tools that you start to see players emerge, which say, look, we've got the CRM tool specifically for businesses in law, specifically for business in tech, because you're trying to address particular needs. What are some of those, you know, particular needs that you see coming out of Asia, which might see certain verticals thrive over others?
Yeah, I think this is a really, really good point, Dan. I really like it. I think you're right. Horizontal, again, when you have to look at it from like a segmentation of the region, I think in a more mature region like India, you probably have more verticalized SaaS, where you've got specific players who are offering a specific service or product to fit a very specific business need in a particular business segment. So like, we build accounting software for car sales companies, and it's specifically tailored and bespoke for car sales companies, as opposed to we just build general accounting software. And so that's probably more for a domain like India. But I think for more emerging markets in the region, I think it is all around the horizontal play. And I think you can probably look at you know, how history's panned out across some of the other businesses in the in Western countries. So like Oracle is a good example, where it was predominantly like enterprise management software. And so they're trying to really manage like, you know, how much are we spending? You know, how many people do we have? Like as a whole organization, or what does our business look like before going into specific workflows? And then I think the next is then very specific low-level workflows. And so after, you know, you have, you know, those ERP systems like Oracle or whatever the equivalent is will be in Asia, you'll probably see, you know, more like HR and accounting software, because that's kind of where the maturity curve goes. Xero is a good example, and you can start to see that in some of these Asian countries where they've started to build out accounting software for SMBs, and I'm sure they'll continue to push across the region. So I think specifically, I can see verticalized SaaS in India, Singapore, Hong Kong, but more horizontal SaaS, as you know, your point, in some of these other regions, starting with like general ERPs and then moving into like low-level tasks like accounting, etc.
One thing I'm really interested about is when we're talking about horizontal SaaS, another example would be like your Atlassians, like your Mondays, where it's like your task-oriented teaming tools. And the reason I'm really interested about those, and I know, you know, these Western countries are operating in Asia and they're trying to sell their products in Asia. There, I think, is the potential to there being like a misfit between the product and the particular like cultural sensitivities of these markets. And, you know, experience I've had in a volunteer organization, 100 plus volunteers spread across Asia and Australia, you know, we really wanted to use in Australia Slack, you know, a pretty useful tool and a tool that a lot of people in the West get on board with. This, our Indonesian, our Asian counterparts could not get around it. You know, they would still be WhatsApping each other, WhatsApping us. And you know, going to your point, Albert, there's just so much more chaos involved when you're using WhatsApp, so much less efficiency than if you're using Slack, which has got some of these protocols and integrations which really facilitate workflow, record keeping, etc. But we just never really could get the transition right. And so I'm really interested, and the parallels I'm thinking of is how you had, you know, Uber first come into Asia, really, I guess, build up the maturity and the familiarity of the concept, but then regional players took over and managed to use the runway to get to the customer with a more localized approach. I wonder if we'll see that in SaaS, probably not in every vertical, but I'm thinking particularly across these sort of teaming tools, whether there'll actually be more, you know, localized players succeeding because of those cultural nuances.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. Like you can definitely see how part of SaaS is like behavior driven. It's like, how do you like bring people within an organization and help them change how they do something to do it differently? And so like your WhatsApp example is a really good example. They're already used to using WhatsApp as a communication. Like you need to show a lot of value to use Slack in order to get them to change how they behave. And that's true for any SaaS business when they're trying to sell to a customer. It's like, this is what you do. This is how you could be doing it. And they need to see that value. And then they need to like adopt it and roll it out. So it's not that easy to like roll out SaaS. And I'm sure, Dan, you know this, trying to use new software that your company is also trying to roll out and people not adopting it or using it and things like that. And so I think that there's a challenge in Asia specifically when it comes to this, because every country has its own cultural contexts. Every country has its own behavioral context, which means like, are you now building a different set of software for every country, or are you investing to educate your customers and your users to do it in the way that, like, for example, in your way? And I think that is a challenge.
And that's super interesting, because it goes back to, you know, in our primer and also in our episode on Atlassian, the different SaaS approaches that are out there. Atlassian, very famous for having the product-led approach where, you know, this is our product. We're going to make it as frictionless as possible for you to access it. But, you know, we're not customizing this for you, compared to some of the other SaaS players out there who, particularly on an enterprise scale, are doing customizations for their customers. In using that observation that you just made there, Albert, would Atlassian's approach work in a market like Asia, which is needing that higher degree of customization potentially?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think, like, again, it always also just comes down to, like, you know, when you say Asia, it's such a homogenous term. And I think the challenge is always like, it's not homogenous at all. And then when you talk about, I guess, like customer segments, it's again, not homogenous. But Atlassian is a specific example, like one of the fastest growing companies, you know, globally. One of their fastest growing regions from a revenue perspective is APAC. But I think because they mainly target developers, you know, want frictionless buying experiences regardless of where they're from. And so because developers have been trained to use Agile, which is something that Atlassian pioneered, they know how to use Jira. So Atlassians have already done the education. But if you're a company coming and starting fresh, you're trying to change how people do things, or even an organization, like trying to get people from WhatsApp into Slack in Asia is going to be very, very challenging.
As we're starting to finish up, Albert, any last points to hit?
Look, I think we weren't that explicit about this, but maybe we should be explicit. I think when we came to this conclusion, as we were talking about, like, now is probably not the right time for SaaS or to be looking deeply into SaaS in Asia, just because the region is so immature and fragmented when it comes to this digital maturity. I think there's probably something in here, though, which is, you know, there's a very interesting competitive landscape in Asia. And if you can identify who can do well quickly, then I think there's a great opportunity here to build an awesome business, because Freshworks could do it, Zoho's done it, Trax will do it. You know, I think despite the maturity, there are companies who will build in Asia because labor's cheaper, and then go to the US straight away. We haven't really talked about that much in the pod, but I think that's the clear opportunity to me.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, America, a really, really mature market. If you look at Freshworks, and check out our episode on Freshworks if you haven't already, you know, so much of that business is orientated towards a customer segment in America. And then once you're building out capability, processes, etc., you can start to service a much smaller market in your own domestic location, which as they start, as the country as a whole starts to get up that curve that we've been talking about since the beginning, that I think is a really interesting business model for sustainable success. Because if you're looking at Freshworks in India, you know, yes, so much of their customer segment in America, in the UK as well, but then India is their third biggest market. And if you're thinking of the business over a 50, 60, 70 year time scale, you can imagine that that gets flipped at some point when India is such a huge market of opportunity, business, an economy that's growing. That becomes a driver and becomes something that is really, really exciting. And ultimately, like when you think of some underlying themes, when we think about Asia, again, homogeneously, it is this idea that, you know, over 50% of the world's population in Asia, so much of economic activity over the next 50 years, over the next century, is going to be in Asia. So I don't think it's bad to have this longer term outlook where it's like you're investing and initially you're going to be building capability and services in the West and then pivoting to Asia as it starts sort of roaring through in the next couple of decades.
Yeah, 100%. I really agree with that.
Okay, Albert, well, let's finish up there. Thank you for listening to East Meets West podcast, a podcast about understanding Asia tech and how Asia tech affects the world. Catch us again next week. Thanks. See ya.